Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book called Clara's Truth, and it is by Susan Weisbach Friedman. And I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Susan. I just want to tell people that Clara is spelled with a K because it is the European spelling.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here. And yes, I'm really glad you started with that because some people can't find it when they look for it online because they don't know it's spelled with a K.
Exactly. And that's why I mentioned it, because I had mentioned to somebody that I was going to be reviewing this book today, and she had looked up Clara with a C.
Yes.
Because I told her, you have to get this book, it's coming out today. And she looked it up and she said, it's not online, it's not there. I'm used to European spellings because I lived in Europe quite a while. It's not unusual, but
yes,
for most people it is.
For Americans, yes.
Yeah.
It is. That's how it was supposed to be. Yes. No, I did that on purpose.
Once people see it and realize that, of course, it is. I also went to Poland many times, and so I wanted to clarify that for anybody, because I interview authors and I say the name of the book at the beginning. And while people are listening to the interview, they'll go online and they'll say, that sounds interesting, I want to order it. And they're looking it up. And so I thought, I better say that right at the beginning.
But thank you.
Okay. It was sent out as a Holocaust book. And although there are a depth in this book about the Holocaust, it's not actually a Holocaust book. And because I do interview a lot of people with Holocaust books that are memoirs and things like that. But the background here is relevant, that it is the trauma from the Holocaust, which never leaves people. And so people who live through it definitely will understand what this book is about.
Yes. Yeah. If I can just say that the book discusses the repercussions of the Holocaust and sets the whole backdrop for the book, as well as being interwoven in the themes of this book. I would say the book is about trauma on many levels, starting with global, with World War II and the Holocaust, and then community and family, intergenerational and individual. So I would say overall the book has to do with trauma and about middle-aged women's coming-of-age experience, where she gets to connect with herself and heal from many levels of trauma that she's experienced.
Exactly. I like that you use the word coming-of-age, because although she starts in the book as age 49, in many ways it is exactly that, a coming-of-age, because she has to deal with the past and the present as she decides on a new life. So it is important. I should also mention to people that you are a doctor, a psychotherapist, right?
I'm a psychotherapist. I'm a clinical social worker, and I've been in practice for over 25 years. And I've also, in more recent years, in addition to working with individuals and couples and families, specialized more in women's issues. And I've done a lot of work as far as being a trauma therapist in terms of training and working in the field.
Because, as I said so many times, when I get a book that's Holocaust related, it is personal memories, family memories. In this case, I don't think it's so much that. It's more the work that you've been doing over the years and the discoveries you've made on mental health and, as you said, on trauma therapy. So that's what you really bring to this book.
Yes, Patsy. And what I'd really like people to get out of it, in addition to enjoying the story, because as from reading, there's a romance piece as well, and just Clara evolves over the course of the story and becomes more embodied and more connected as a person. What I'd like people to understand is that when somebody has gone through trauma, especially at an early age, and Clara has lost her father, she thinks he abandoned her, it turns out there's another story behind that, she's encountered abuse, and her mother is quite neglectful and critical, that impacts on a person's ability to develop emotionally and psychologically, and that they may be able to go on intellectually and academically as she does, and she becomes a PhD archaeologist and is a professor and a researcher, that she is quite stunted in her development. And that when somebody is that way, there are reasons why. Maybe not her reasons, but that often there is something in their history. And so that I hope that people can understand that more. And if I can just say, some people have written to me or written about the book and said, I couldn't quite connect with Clara. She seems quite naive. Oh, but then and then some will say, oh, I guess she does develop. But that's actually the whole point to me, is understanding what she's gone through and then her development through these resources of her father's family that she's able to interact with and meet in Poland. And one other thing I just want to say, as a therapist, I can't just make up a family, a loving family for someone. But as a writer, I could, and that was really exciting to me.
Exactly. That's why when I was reading it, I kept thinking, first of all, I love the way that you introduce the subject. I always like books that have letters. I'm a sucker for letters. I love that reveal. I remember as a kid, I used to always dig in the attic for old letters. I love that. Oh. And you do learn so much from old letters. I like that people keep them. The next generation won't have them.
I know. It's not, emails aren't the same. Yeah.
No, you don't put the same ideas in an email that you would in a letter, that handwritten letter.
And I suppose maybe not the same sort of love and care, right?
Exactly.
And attention, yeah.
So I like that very much. And the letters play a very important role as the story develops. We discover from the first letter in the first chapter, which is startling in itself. Later on in the book, we discover a whole treasure trove of more letters that really set things straight and are part of this whole discovery that Clara is going on. Because as you pointed out, and people have noticed, she does seem immature. She is a doctor, a graduate of Harvard, yet she hasn't come to grips with things. But then that's partly because she's got these areas that she's blacked out of her life.
Yes. These parts of her, what trauma does to people is that in terms of within their bodies, there's a frozenness in their nervous system. When it comes to what happened, they may be able to, and often they can develop around it in terms of, especially in other areas. But emotionally and psychologically, they are often, if they do not get either professional help or have a lot of support around what that trauma was soon after it happened. Also, if they didn't have a lot of support before that trauma happened, they often are very emotionally stuck and frozen in it. So we see Clara thawing, right, and unfreezing over the course of the novel, especially her aunt, her father's sister, Rachel, is a very warm, nurturing, maternal figure and is very integral in that happening.
It's funny when you, as you're writing this, when she remembers so clearly her father, her memories of her father, the last time she saw her father, all of that is so clear. And then you don't think that she'll forget a lot of other stuff. But that part, that memory is very strong in her, that memory of that last time she saw him.
That's right. I think that memories, when they're very positive and very loving, and unfortunately, when they're very negative, those are memories that really, emotional memories that really imprint strongly on us and that we remember. Trauma actually is a little bit of a different story because there can be dissociation. But just going back to her remembering, that she remembers how much she loved her father before he left at age 6 and how much he loved her, which is why she had to bury that feeling toward him, because her mother had convinced her that the father had abandoned the family, when in fact there were other things. Actually, in the very beginning, in the first letter, it says what happened to him, which is so I'm just going to say it because it says it in the first page, that he was in a train accident and he died. But the mother never revealed that to Clara. And curiously, Clara, even though she asked as a child, she stopped asking because it was just too painful.
I like the way you painted that picture. And it's always when an author can paint a scene, I could visualize as she's remembering the last few times she saw him, the story of how he took her to the park and how she had this absolute joy of being in his company. I like the way you wrote that part.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. I actually really loved writing that part. I thought of actually myself as a child and being on the swing and loving to swing all the way up with my toes to the sky. So it really came from deep within inside of me, that aspect of her being just so happy in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. You captured that. You captured that beautifully. I thought that was great. Let's talk about Poland, because it is the setting for the majority of the book. And just to give a sort of that you have some knowledge of Poland, that you've been to Poland, tell us about, and obviously that impacted also when you came out with the idea for the story. Tell us about your own trip to Poland.
Yes, yeah. So my husband and I went on a Jewish heritage trip to Poland, and that was inspired, that was over 10 years ago. We went in 2013, and it was really inspired from a couple of things. Both our Jewish heritage, and my husband was very interested. Both of us have Eastern Jewish European background, and both from Poland in particular and also from Russia, I have some Italian ancestry as well, but that's separate. And I had already come up with this idea of Clara, and Clara's an archaeologist. And I had another story that preceded this one that I was told was a separate book, so it may become a prequel, but she starts out in the Yucatan. So I had written this whole piece about her doing a dig in the Yucatan and then going to Poland. And so that's a big part of also how we went to Poland. What I want to be really clear in saying, and I say it in one of the first pages of the book in terms of talking a little bit about Poland, that Poland has not given reparations to land that was stolen by the Nazis, either from Jewish families or non-Jewish families, and they are one of the few countries that has not. So I fictionalize that. Germany obviously has taken responsibility. It was there. The Nazis were under Germany, but other countries have done some other things. But I just want to be really clear that this is fictional.
Yeah, that's important, actually, to make that
distinction. Yes.
Yes, it is, because now we did also a trip to Poland. We actually went to my mother-in-law's home where she was born and raised in Lublin. And we actually had a situation where the people who now occupy that building, her family had an entire building. The ground floor was the best paint shop in Lublin. It was a very modern, one of the most modern shops in Poland at the time. They had this wonderful selection of paints and wallpapers and all of that stuff. And the three floors above were the family residence. Mm-hmm. And we went there. Of course, we were standing outside, and the antagonism was incredible. They got scared that we were there, like, to take it back or something.
Oh my.
So it is definitely something that people will think about. And I think, because I was aware that this wasn't true, but it's good that you mentioned that too, because but it plays into the story beautifully, because that's exactly what you needed to propel this story ahead.
Yes, I really appreciate your saying that, Patsy, and getting that. When I think of reparations, so Germany has given reparations, and so that's on the level of a country, that's reparations. And then if you get down to a personal level, a family or individual level, reparations for trauma and Germany's reparations for the trauma of World War II and the Holocaust in particular are so important as a way of both taking responsibility for what one does, what they did, and for also saying, and I'm going to try to make things better, even though I can't undo what was done. I think for people who have experienced trauma of various sorts, through war, through abuse, through all kinds of things, that when reparations can be made, that is a very significant piece. Often, reparations do not happen. Again, I'm talking about on many different levels. But in this book, I wanted to start out with the idea that there were reparations. right? And there was this recognition of what had been done.
Yeah. And the dramatic arrival, her dramatic arrival, as she sets out on this quest to find about her father's, what happened, it turns out to be a very dramatic, her first encounter, where she finds that she's not welcome. So it is always an undercurrent in the relationship of those who go back. People have to remember that there were over 3 million Jews in Poland.
Yes.
Before the war. Yes. It wasn't a small population. It was a major.
No. It was apparently it was the second largest Jewish population in the world. The first, I believe, at that point was in New York City. And now, when we went back, that was 10 years ago, we heard that over and over again, we were told that there were between 3,000 and 10,000 Jewish people living there at that time. And our group met with the chief rabbi of Poland, and he had said that at the time, too. What I want to mention, though, in terms of piggybacking on that, is since the Berlin Wall came down in 1989, or maybe even just a year before that, there has been something called the Jewish Cultural Krakow Festival, which I talk about in the book, and we were actually there during part of it. And so there's this embracing and celebrating Jewish culture and Jewish life, and more people since that time have been coming out to their children and grandchildren on their deathbeds, telling them that, in fact, they are Jewish or partly Jewish. And some young people have been embracing that, and there's even a Jewish community center in Krakow. And there are some active synagogues, but the Jewish population is still quite small. Yeah.
What I liked, of course, you bring in the flavor of Poland. It is a fascinating place. Well, when you're there, you can see why. At the time, people didn't want to leave. They had a good life there.
And my understanding is that much of Poland was razed, although there are parts, it has been rebuilt, both under the communists and parts of it to look like it traditionally looked, and then just contemporary parts now. Krakow is a beautiful city, which Poland is too in its own way, but Krakow really holds its original Polish traditional look and feel, and it was not damaged to the extent that Warsaw was, much, much less.
As you said, the great thing about being a writer is that you can create your world. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, poor Clara.
It gets better for her.
But it does. And that is, I think, probably something also perhaps that you've learned through your work as a psychotherapist, that things do get better for people.
Things do get better for people, not just magically, but sometimes things can feel a little magical, but through their own work, through working on their own inner resources, at the same time they're working on developing their outer resources or further including more resources. But making a lot of work in therapy overall and with trauma in particular is after helping people to unfreeze, to also or simultaneously help them to really take in their resources and to grow their world so they're not so isolated, because trauma often leaves people feeling quite isolated and alone.
You're right. This book does make you feel hopeful that people can work through their problems in their life, the trauma that they've gone through, and I don't know if it's the right word to say, put it in perspective and realize that you're here. You might as well try to enjoy your life that you've got.
And I think in the bigger picture, people are able to put things into perspective, but it happens typically in very small steps, right? Just like a little bit at a time. And for her, when in writing this, because all of a sudden she had this loving family that she never had. Her cousin was very suspicious of her for various reasons, but her father's sister, Rachel, was immediately very loving and thrilled that she was there. So, she immediately embraced Clara and gave Clara this sort of strong grounding and terra firma that Clara had never experienced before. And
yeah, what I like is the relationship that Clara develops with her aunt, because it is so funny. It reminded me of somebody once said, it's a call of the blood. Sometimes you meet a cousin that you've never met, that really somebody you've never met, and yet suddenly, for some reason, you feel like you've known them forever.
Yes, and sometimes that happens right when somebody's not even a blood relative. But I would say in this case, the fact that they are blood relatives does matter a lot, because Clara reminds Rachel, her aunt, of her brother, of her dear late brother, Clara's father, who passed many years earlier. And I talk about her eyes and her mouth and reminding Rachel, and Rachel, Aunt Rachel, and Aunt Rachel is taken aback when she really looks at Clara at first, thinking and says, "You look like somebody I once knew," before the reveal happens that Clara is actually Clara, is her late, Rachel's late brother's daughter. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the way that you did that. Now, of course, you said you started the book or the idea for the book a long time ago, and it took you a while.
It took me a while. Yeah, I can speak to that, sure.
Yeah.
I hadn't been a writer in the past. I wrote as a kid, and I loved that. But I would say in my 40s, I started to do some journaling. And as I was doing that, I came up with some ideas, and I started to turn them into short stories. And there was this particular idea that came from both my being a therapist and also being somebody in therapy myself. And what I started to think about was how memory, as you're really bringing it up, is an excavation. And the parallel between therapists helping the client or patient to excavate the memory very slowly and very carefully, just like an archaeologist does with artifacts, right? Because with artifacts and excavation, you want to be very gentle with the site that you're excavating on, that you're not going to maybe ruin anything else nearby. And I think in the mind also, when you're bringing up memory, you want to do it slowly, so that you're helping the person stay grounded in doing that. And so from there, I came up with this character of Clara, and she immediately became an archaeologist. And she wasn't somebody who went to therapy, but she was somebody who was very interested in connecting with other cultures, and that had a lot to do with her feeling connected to the world. And then what happens, and I say it in this book, I refer back to a time in the past, like a year before, she meets a Mayan woman healer in the Yucatan who says to her, "Why are you so interested in everybody else's cultures when what about your own?" And then shortly after that, she gets her mother's letter. But I had to change things around so that I could book, as I was told the other book was a separate book. So, yeah. So that's how that came about.
This happens when you're writing a book. You find that you have to move things around. And sometimes, as you said, to make it tighter, to concentrate on one of the subjects, which I think really works very well here. Because when you think about it, for Clara, the idea of what she has to get a grip on, and people who have had these problems, they do sometimes, their life is like, on one level, they're like going along trying to stay at that level without getting into the trauma, without getting into the depth, because it's too painful.
That's
and
right.
I think you show that Clara is, because right from the beginning, you start thinking about why is she like this? Why isn't she, perhaps why hasn't she been curious along the way? Because she's, 49, she's pushing 50, and she hasn't done anything up to this point, and that has laid out her whole life of having all these insecurities.
Yes, early childhood trauma in particular can really do that to a person in terms of, if they don't seek help or have nurturing people around them, in terms of them becoming shut down and just trying to survive and living in survival mode and putting one foot in front of the other. And I think that's really important for people to understand about trauma and about other people. And they might look at someone like Clara and think, oh, she seems a little, before she went to Poland, she seems a little odd. She's, you know, not in a relationship. She doesn't seem to have too many friends. She works, but she is mostly to herself. And why is she like that? Why didn't she ever develop in any other ways? And so often in people's lives, there is, I wouldn't even say often, I would say always there's a story, whether it's a story of what somebody went through, maybe there's somewhat of an organic piece. Even there are always stories about people's backgrounds, right?
For exactly. All of us. You laid that out very well. One question I want to ask that's in the book, do you have a Steiff bear?
Oh, that's so funny. I do not, but a very good friend of mine whose mother came from Germany at age 4 had a ton of Steiff stuffed animals, and that's where I got it from.
Oh, yeah. My goodness, because you know how valuable they are.
I know. I know now and even back then that they were expensive to get. Yes.
Oh, they're selling for a fortune. And I thought maybe if she has a Steiff bear, she can just, if you had a Steiff bear, because they're like, some of them are worth hundreds and thousands of dollars now. People don't realize
that. I will definitely let my friend Nancy know that.
Oh, yeah. They're rare ones because they were the first articulated bears, not just stuffed. They had arms that could be bent into different, you know, positions.
Yes.
And so those ones that have the articulation from the early ones,
yes,
they can be worth $100,000.
Wow. I don't recall if hers had arms and legs that moved. I do remember there was some kind of little symbol on it that showed that it was definitely a Steiff bear. Or
okay, well,
dog or,
yeah. Yeah, they're numbered. They're numbered. And so it depends on the number, but they're very, so I thought I might be talking to a millionaire here. So I was hoping.
not me.
But it was a nice little addition because that's exactly the kind of bear that they would have.
Her German-American mother was the one who made sure that's what she got for her birthday.
I like little details like that. And I hadn't read about anybody having a Steiff bear in their book before. So I thought, I like that idea. Oh. Now, whoever suggested that you break it into two books did you a good service, I think, because the prequel sounds interesting. I want to know about that dig. So,
I'm so glad you said that, because somebody else had said to me, prequels are tougher because people already know what's going to happen ultimately. But I don't know, but I still put a lot of myself into a lot of blood.
I want to hear about it. Okay. I want to hear about it. I think at one point when you're writing about maybe it's in the acknowledgments or somewhere, you mentioned something about that it's I don't know if it was when you got your books, you said it's a joy to get my books. Yeah, joy is a word that I love to hear people use, because that's why I named this program Joy on Paper, because it's such a joy to read, but it's also such a joy to see your words on paper. And once you've done the first book, you can't stop.
That's my plan, Patsy. My plan is to keep going. Yes.
I knew that. But the minute you get this first book, after that, it's easier, because the first book always, you have to get that just the words on paper, you have to get it right the first time, and you know that it's sounding really good. And so you should be very proud that it does.
Yeah.
Of course,
but
now you're in the stage of being the writer.
And just to tell you, so today is my pub day. You are the first person that I've talked to about my book. I have some book events this week. The first person, like today, and with publishing today, that I've talked about this with. So that's really exciting. And
I love to be on the day a book comes out, because I love to be a little part of your history forever. You'll remember the day that your book comes out.
You certainly are.
As a matter of fact, are you celebrating today? Champagne? What are you going to do on? You should get into a ritual of something you do on your release date and make it a sort of a habit that you're going to do that every time you release a book.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
And one of them is like a photograph of yourself with a bottle of champagne or whatever you like to do.
I love that. I love that. So I did do, I didn't have a bottle of champagne with me, but I did do a video that I'm posting, that the person who helps me with social media is posting on my social media today. And definitely I'll be celebrating with a bottle of champagne later. And then I'm heading with my younger daughter to Boston for my first reading at Harvard Bookstore in Cambridge, and then that's Wednesday, and then coming back to New York, to Westchester County and New York City to do some other readings. Not just readings, but events. Yeah.
Oh, that's good, because that's one of the things that people sometimes with their first book, they don't understand that after you write the book, you have to do the promotion. And it doesn't matter whether you're published by a major publisher or a hybrid publisher.
Or hybrid or even an independent. Yes, that's what I understand. Unless when somebody's a very big name, they don't have to do as much of the publicity themselves. But yes, nowadays you have to do a lot.
Oh, yes. Because I remember the first time Mary Higgins Clark was on my program, we were talking about it. And she said, in the old days, like 10 years before that, they used to send me first class and with an assistant.
Oh, my goodness.
And the assistant would be the one responsible for getting my luggage, getting me to the airport, taking me. And she said, they don't do that anymore.
And I love it. And I have to say, I read a lot of Mary Higgins Clark books in the past. I love that she was on your program.
Oh, yeah. She was wonderful. She just loved having her on the program, because I tricked her one time. And I decided to really, I was going to really impress her. So I used the first three sentences from her books in my opening to her. And then I realized she doesn't remember these sentences. They were her sentences. And so I tell her, and she said, Mom, where did I write those books? And I said, one is from book three, or one is from book seven.
She said,
I don't remember writing all those first sentences. That's funny, but yeah, it is a different world. And of course, I think you will remember that your first sentence, and for a while.
Well, know that it's part of a letter, yes.
That perhaps when you get to book 25 or something like that, because you have a long career ahead of you.
Oh, thank you for your support, really.
Really, the oldest guest on my program was 100 years old.
Wow.
Eugenia Levitt West, and she had just written a book about cybercrime at the age of 100.
That's amazing.
And that took a lot of research. So,
of course,
you did some research on this book, but nothing as in-depth or as difficult as cybercrime.
No. And I have a little while to go before I'm 100, so I have time.
So, yeah, if you do a book a year, you can add up how many books you're going to by the time you're 100. So but I'm glad that you found this joy. And I think that what you've done finally, I don't know if you would, when you decide to publish a book, it's not easy. And I know that She Writes Press is really great. And really, they are an encouraging group, because they really do want to encourage, particularly they want to encourage women to write and to get out there and to tell their stories. And in your case, you bring a lot to this, whole understanding of human nature, of trauma. And I think from that point of view, this book can be very helpful. I think perhaps in a way, what I hope that people read it and they say, I want to make sure I'm not like that person. I want to make sure that I do the right thing. I want to make sure that I'm a loving mother. I want to make sure that I sort of pass on my trauma to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that people can learn from a book like this.
I hope so. I hope so, that they can think about themselves and also reflect on other people also. So that there's a lot more sort of self-understanding and understanding of others, and then compassion for themselves and for others. Yes. And to me, that's all about healing.
When you were ready, I just wanted to ask, as you were preparing to write and trying to get into this whole author mode, where you have to start thinking like an author, because journaling is a great start. I think I'm a great believer that people should keep journals. They are so useful to have. And you never know, like, when you're going to want to write a book. So if you start keeping journals at a young age, I think it's great. And then you have all this information, and you might have an occupation that keeps you busy for 30 years, but then at the end of the 30 years, you sit back and you say, well, I did all this stuff, and I'd like to write, but I didn't keep a journal. But if you have a journal, it really helps.
Yes, and there's somebody in my cohort who did just that and had kept a journal for many years and shared that in her memoir, and that is wonderful. I personally did not do that. And so I think both are, you may come from either one or the other or perspective or somewhere in between. And yeah, and I think often, even if we don't keep a journal, we keep a journal in our minds, in the back of our minds or our subconscious. And so I think journaling is a great experience. And you had asked me earlier about the 10 years and just now also about becoming, writing more as an author. I had to learn to do that, and that was a big learning curve. And actually worked a little bit with a developmental editor, and that really helped. And I also took a class, and I took some workshops. But it's very different just writing than writing with the idea that this is going to be a finished product, that's going to be a book.
Were there any particular novels that grabbed you, or an author whose sort of style that you said, yeah, that would make me comfortable? Because in some ways, you might have done this in a first-person way. Many authors are doing that. They decide to write it as a first-person. But I think this works better not being a first-person.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. Yeah, I didn't really want to write as a first-person. It felt just more natural for me to step back a little bit. So I'd say a couple of authors that just come right to mind are Jenna Blum, who wrote Those Who Save Us, and she's written some other books since then. That was more of a Holocaust book, and she's written a book that is about her experience of being a dog owner, and the name of it is escaping me at this moment. Oh, it's Something on the Bench. Oh, I can't think of the name. But she's written different stories, some that have a Holocaust theme, others that are more general, and I just really like her style. And then another author that I've read and really enjoyed is Linda Cohn-Leukman, and she also writes about, I would say, that there are Jewish themes in her books about immigrants and so forth. And I think with both of those authors, I don't believe that they're in the first person. Some have a mixture of different narrators' voices.
I think you did a great job with this, and I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And the name of the book is Clara's Truth, and Clara is spelled with a K. And do you have a website?
Well, my website is my name, which is SusanWeisbachFriedman.com. And I'm not going to take the time to spell it out, but yes, that's how you get there.
They'll find you. And then we'll wait until the next book comes out, and you'll be back here on Joy on Paper, okay?
Thank you so much for having me, Patsy. It was really a joy to speak with you.
Cheers to you, and enjoy your champagne today.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Okay, Clara Weisbeck Friedman. That's a long website name, but if you remember that, just look for Clara with a K, and it's a fascinating book, and she did a really nice job with this book, so I'm very happy about that. Bye-bye now.